Welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show, where wealth includes much more than just money. It includes family, fitness, romance, and all the other parts of a balanced life. Listen and learn how 70% of the millionaires in America made their money using real estate. Now your host, real estate investor and consultant, Steve Davis.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. You may notice something a little different today, and that's because it is not Steve, my dad, on the radio show, but it is me, Trevor, and I'm doing my very first radio show today, so thank you all so much for tuning in. I have a lot that I want to talk about, a lot on my mind that I want to give to people, and I've had a hard time trying to figure out how I could get started with this, because I'm going to be doing this now every Wednesday, and I want everybody who's tuning in to tune in to my show every Wednesday, because I want to give you something new every single week. This week, I want to start off with something that's already changed my life for the better, and it's a quote by one of the smartest people of all time. We all know who this man is, but this is Albert Einstein, and he said that the measure of intelligence is the ability to change. And that has resonated with me so strongly these days, because intelligence is not about the ability to just do math quickly, memorize a bunch of facts and spout them off quickly, or how smart you act. It ultimately boils down to whether or not you have the ability to change and whether you can act upon that change, because change can be literally the scariest thing most of us face, and that really boils down to the survival brain of the caveman brain that we've been investigating a whole lot here at Total Wealth Academy recently. It's basically the part of us that wants us to keep doing the same things over and over again, even if it's not getting us the best results, simply because the actions that we've done so far have not killed us. They have not caused us to suffer enough to our lives to make our lives end. Literally, this is the survival brain that just wants us to do the safe stuff. And it could even be stuff that we've done that has messed up our lives, that's caused us pain, that's caused us suffering. But we're still going to have this brain tell us to keep doing it consciously or subconsciously because we know it let us at least survive. So we have to be ready to do something different really at all times, especially if we're not in the position that we want to be in. We also have to give credit, though, to the other part of our brain that's working at all times too, and that's the conscious brain, the conscious mind. We're going to call that the mind moving forward, because it's that other part of us that's saying at all times, I want something better. I want something more from life. I don't feel content with what I have right now. It's literally two conflicting brain patterns that are basically fighting each other at most times, and they're creating this severe inner conflict for most of us, including myself many times, that we're just getting stuck, just cycling back and forth between these two parts of us, and we can't seem to get one in charge or the other. And of course, we want our mind to be in charge. We want our mind, our conscious brain, to be in charge, because that's what's going to push us forward to achieving our goals. Our survival brain is not the part of us that's going to set goals. The survival part of us is not the one that says, I want to have an awesome, amazing relationship, an awesome relationship with my kids, an awesome relationship with my coworkers. Whatever that specific goal is, your survival brain is not going to set anything worthwhile to pursue. We also have to make sure that we give credit, though, to what the survival brain does for us on a daily basis, and that ultimately is to keep us alive, to keep us safe and sound. And let's take the extreme example of if we're in the middle of a street, a car is racing towards us, they're not going to stop. Our survival brain is going to activate because we have to get out of this situation as quickly as possible. We have to behave in a way that gets our body physically out of danger as quickly as possible. And the mind isn't per se good at that. The mind is the thinking brain. The mind is the one that wants to create all these plans and long-term goals. So in short-term emergencies, we still have to be able to channel that survival caveman brain when the time comes. But that being said, credit where credit is due, most of us are not in survival situations on a daily basis. And when it comes to our long-term happiness, it's not really a matter of if we're going to survive, because most of us have, we have our shelter, we have food, we have water, we have employment, we have almost all of our survival needs met. So we have to make sure that our survival brain's always going to be nurtured effectively. It's always doing what it needs to do on a daily basis, so we don't have to worry too much about neglecting it. The issue is that most of us are neglecting our thinking brain, our goal-setting brain, and we're getting stuck with the caveman brain that's always trying to tear down the goals set by the mind, that's always trying to tear down the ambitions that we're setting for ourselves, because it doesn't want us to get hurt, it doesn't want us to get injured, and above all, it doesn't want to get us killed. That's the last thing our survival brain wants. It's hard programmed to make sure that we're going to do whatever it takes to survive, but we cannot just survive. So with all that starting out, I want to take us back now to thousands upon thousands of years ago, to the very beginning of civilization, where we're seeing people already develop and cultivate the techniques to take advantage of capitalism, to take advantage of investing, that have already been building people wealth for thousands of years. You'll see patterns, you'll see the same things over and over and over again, no matter what culture you're looking at, no matter what culture you're studying, no matter what time period you're looking at. We're just seeing that the same things work just as much as we're seeing the same stuff that doesn't work over and over and over again. The most important book that we have people start off with is called The Richest Man in Babylon. And you've probably heard my dad discuss this book multiple times throughout the radio show. But I want to let you all know that I can send you this book for free. All you have to do is send me an email, put radio in the subject line, and send an email to trevor@gettotalwealth.com or trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. So I'll send you that book, but I'm actually going to give y'all this book now in my own way, and basically the way that boils down the most important parts in the most concise way. So ancient Babylon is about the year 2500 BC, and a young man named Akrod is a scribe. And a scribe is somebody that literally is taking a metal stick, hammering it into stone, and writing down the symbols and the words that create ledgers and records, and they're effectively the original printers. And one day, Akrod meets Algamish. Algamish is the man that is currently the richest man in Babylon. He's a moneylender, and he was not always a moneylender. He used to be a sheep herder, literally working in the fields. But now he is the go-to guy for lending across the city of Babylon. Everybody, including the king of Babylon, looks to Algamish to get their financing, and everybody loves and respects him in general. This one time, Algamish comes in there, he meets Akrod, and Akrod has always had this goal of becoming wealthy, and Akrod asks Algamish, please tell me how you became wealthy. Just, I need to know how to do this. Can you please help me? And Algamish says, okay, you know what? I have a good feeling about you. I'm actually going to tell you what I did. But first, you have to save at least 10% of what you make here as a scribe. You might not think that it's a whole lot. You might think that it's just a tiny bit of compensation for the hard work that you do, but you have to save at least 10% of what you're making in order to be able to invest in anything, whatever it is that you decide you want to invest in. So Algamish leaves, Akrod gives him what he came for, and a year passes, and Akrod has saved up 10% of his income. So that would end up being a little over 1 month's worth of income he has for himself. And Akrod decides to invest his money with a man who's going to go across the sea to find jewels. This man is a baker. He has a reputable bakery in the city, and Akrod trusts him to take care of this. So Akrod gives this man all of his money. This man leaves across the city, goes across the sea, and he buys jewels from the Phoenicians in what is now modern-day Tunisia, and comes back to Babylon after about 3 months. They take the jewels to the jeweler to sell them. The jeweler takes a look at them, looks at them, and says, "These jewels are not jewels. These jewels are glass. You've brought me glass. Where did you get these things? You've clearly been tricked somehow." After that experience, it's not long before Algamish returns to Akrod's shop, and Akrod reports to Algamish that, "Look, I saved up 10%, but I invested it and I lost all of my money. What am I supposed to do in this situation?" And Algamish laughs at Akrod. He says, "Akrod, why in the world did you decide to put your money to buy jewels with a baker? Why did you decide to spend your hard-earned money to invest in jewels with a baker? The baker knows how to make bread. He does not necessarily know how to purchase jewels." And Akrod felt very, very foolish, but he was determined not to give up. Another year passes, Akrod saves another 10% of his yearly income, and this time he invests with the shield maker to buy bronze. The shield makers back then made all of their stuff with bronze. This is before the Iron Age. So in this situation, he makes a wise investment because he starts to make a significant return on his investment. That is actually going to be where I need to cut it for this part, but once we come back, I'm going to go ahead and finish the story of Akrod and Algamish. Thank y'all so much for tuning in to the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I'm Trevor Davis.
Were you told that it's normal to lose money in a down market? That's just not true. Hi, I'm Steve Davis, CEO of Total Wealth Academy. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets while creating a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. If you have $100,000 or more to invest, you should consider this to protect and grow your money. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com, that's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank y'all so much for tuning back in. This is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy radio show. I already got my first couple of emails for the book. So if you want to get the PDF of The Richest Man in Babylon, please send me an email, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. That's Trevor, T-R-E, V as in Victor, O-R, at totalwealthacademy.com. And if y'all want to call in, please give us a call at the KSEV 700 number, which is 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-5738 to call in. So we were just discussing The Richest Man in Babylon. We just got to the point where Akrod is investing with the shield maker to buy bronze. And the shield maker is using that money to purchase the bronze he needs to make shields. And Akrod is making his returns on this. And this is going extremely well for Akrod. This is his second investment attempt, and it's working out perfectly. This guy is local. He lives right down the street from Akrod. So it's a much, much safer bet. and he's making a significant profit from this. Akrod, at this point, takes all of the profit that he made from that investment and puts it into buying a bunch of stuff. He buys real jewels to decorate himself. He buys fancy silks. He buys a fancy young horse to ride. And he buys himself a bunch of fancy wine as well. Algamish comes back to Akrod, and he notices that he's already quite different. And he asks him, "How is your investment going?" Akrod said, "My investment is going fantastic. Look at all this stuff I was able to buy." And Algamish laughs at him again, and he says, "Akrod, I'm very happy that you're able to afford this now, but how are you going to afford it again? How are you going to afford more if that's what you truly want for yourself, like you were telling me?" And Akrod felt embarrassed. He was embarrassed once more, and he said, "I don't know. What do I need to do in this situation? I'm already making the money. What am I supposed to do then?" And Algamish says, "This is the next thing you need to do. You have to set a certain portion of your investment profit to further investments. Let's say it's 10% at least. Again, probably more like 25% would be better or more. As much as you really can is what you need to put towards more investments." And that's when Akrod goes out. He cuts his spending, his radically increased spending, through the lifestyle creep, and he uses the money he was making from the shield maker to purchase investments in the baker, in the astronomer, in the farmers. And now Akrod has multiple income streams, multiple investments. They're working out for him. He's making a lot of profit from his income streams. And finally, Algamish meets with Akrod, and he says, "Akrod, I think that you've got what it takes. I think that I want you to be the manager of my portfolio." And Akrod is very much taken aback by this. He was not expecting this at all. But Algamish basically says, "Look, my own sons think only of spending. My own family doesn't want anything to do with actually making money. They just like to spend, 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 no matter what I've done or said. They just keep on spending the money." So he decides to give his lands to Akrod as the manager, and he decides that Akrod is going to get them once he passes away. And that ends up being the reason why, in this scenario, Akrod became the richest man in Babylon. He proved that he had what it took to take over the assets from Algamish, and that's what skyrocketed him to that point. So this context of the story is actually very interesting, because it's set in a meeting with Akrod and all of his friends, and some people take it to heart, some people learn to live with it, other people don't take it so well. But one of the other interesting things is that we're talking about 2500 BC, but if we move time forward a good bit, let's take a look at what was going on in the ancient Roman Empire. And we're talking about 500 BC, right around when Rome was first founded, according to the story. And then you have the empire beginning, and that's just before the birth of Jesus, right around 0 AD, a little bit before BC is what most people have identified. But right around this time, in the Common Era, in the AD era, you had all around Rome apartment complexes called insulae. And you can literally go to Rome today. I did an archaeological dig out in Ostia, which is the coastal city next to Rome. But the insulae were the apartments of ancient Rome. They were two stories, three stories, four, even five stories tall. The biggest ones were closer to the bottom because you could have the roofs be bigger. You had to basically reduce your ceiling size as you got up, because their building technology wasn't as strong. But these were literally apartments, just just like the ones we have today 2,000 years ago. And one of the richest people of all time was named Crassus. And you have to be a little careful with this character because Crassus was not a very nice guy. There's a very funny story about Crassus to where he was the guy that ran one of the fire brigades in Rome. And he was the guy that would basically bring out his whole team. They'd have tons of buckets full of water, wheelbarrows and barrels and carts full of water. They'd roll up to the place that was on fire. The person would come out and they would say, "Hey, I need help. Can you please put out this fire?" And Crassus would say, "Sure. How much are you going to pay?" He was kind of a jerk. Let's just say that. But that being said, Crassus was one of the richest people of all time. And his money making was built through the apartment complexes of Rome, literally 2,000 years ago. I'll expand on that a little bit more after our next break. Thank y'all so much again for tuning in. This is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy Radio Show.
Have a financial planner, ask them these two questions. One, will I lose money in a down market? Two, do I still pay you if I lose money? If the answer to either question is yes, fire them and come see us. Our clients make money in both the up and down markets and create a lifetime income stream with passive real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and click the free sample class button. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com. Thank you.
All right, everybody. Thank y'all so much for tuning back in. This is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy Radio Show. And before the break, we were discussing ancient Rome's apartment complexes. And those are called insulae, I-N-S-U-L-A-E. Very, very similar to the apartments we have today. Very similar to an apartment that you may have lived in yourself. I've lived in my share of apartment complexes. I've worked at my fair share of apartment complexes. They're very, very similar. The question I have for people that comes from this is, if this is something that people have been doing for literally thousands of years, why do you think this is not something you can try? Why do you think that this is something that only other people get to be successful in and you don't? Please consider real estate to build wealth, because I've seen it work. I see it work on a consistent basis. I've seen it work for myself. I've seen it work for my family, my dad, my mom, the members here at Total Wealth Academy. But I always want to make people understand that this is stuff that literally anybody can do. You do not have to be a super genius. You don't have to have $1 million already. You don't have to have years and decades of real estate experience, because we have people that literally have no experience that get into real estate, just like we have people that have some experience that get into real estate and some people that join us that have been in real estate for decades. But the only thing that somebody needs to take action is ultimately the goal and ultimately the determination to get to that goal, no matter what happens on the pathway to it. It doesn't matter if you get knocked up, knocked down. It doesn't matter if you get kicked down. It doesn't matter if you're thrown around. It doesn't matter what happens to you. Something is going to happen to you that's going to mess your plan up, and it's going to set you off track sooner or later. Now, we already talked about the richest man in Babylon. We already talked about ancient Rome. The next thing I want to discuss here is a couple of the facts going on in our country when it comes to why people need to get started in this as soon as possible. Or they need to figure out something that allows them to build wealth. It could be real estate. It could be a business that you're passionate about. But there are a lot of warning bells going off these days. And it's almost like they're not even unique at this point, because we've just seen these warning bells going on for a long time. And even though we're seeing the consequences of ignoring them every single day, people are still sticking to that fixed path because we're getting stuck on what our survival brain is pushing us towards. The lifestyle that is not getting us the results that we want, the lifestyle that's getting us decent results but not getting us excellent results, simply because it's letting us survive. So here's what I just saw just a couple of days ago, but this is a report. It was published on the 3rd of this month, so March 3rd, 2022, 6 days ago, from a corporation called Lending Club, the parent company of Lending Club Bank, America's leading digital marketplace bank, with some statistics about Americans living paycheck to paycheck. Okay, so here goes. Right now, 64% of all Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. And that is 12 percentage points higher than April 2021. And that's a 3% percentage point jump just between December 2021, you know, just a couple months ago, and January 2022. So a 3% jump between December and January. And of course, paycheck to paycheck, it means literally spending almost everything you have from each paycheck. It's not building up savings. It's not having anything to fall back on. It's not having an emergency supply of funds there. It's literally what comes in, almost all of it goes out, if not more. And in many cases, it is more, because people continue to develop debt. But it does get even worse. At the same time we're talking about all Americans, guess what percentage of consumers who make more than $100,000 a year, what percentage of those people are living paycheck to paycheck? Do we think one third? Do we think a quarter? Do we think 20%, 10% maybe? Right now, it's 48% of people earning more than $100,000 each year are living paycheck to paycheck in January 2022. That is up from 42% in December, and it was 39% back in May 2021, and it reached that high of 50% in November 2021, so just a couple months ago. So now we're sitting at 48% of people making over $100,000 a year, they're still living paycheck to paycheck. Why is that? Why are people that are making what is a lot of money still living paycheck to paycheck? To me, this is something that we've been investigating recently, but it's called that lifestyle creep. I kind of spoiled this a little while ago, but lifestyle creep is when somebody has met a certain goal in terms of their financial income. They said, hey, I want to make, let's say, $75,000 a year, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000 a year, and I want to use that money to become wealthy. What happens to a lot of people, and how they get distracted in this case, is that they start noticing just automatically that there's all this stuff that they can now afford. It may have been something that they really wanted to buy whenever they were a kid. It may have been an extravagant vehicle. May have been the house, the 5,000 square foot house with the pool and the 6 bedrooms. It could be a whole bunch of different things, or it could just be just casual expenses where it's like we're eating out more. We're spending all this money on these extravagant dinners, and it all just ends up adding up because it's stuff that we couldn't do before. And then we find out, once the math is all said and done, that let's say we were saving $5,000 a year when we were making $50,000 a year. Somebody makes $100,000. They're spending so much now that they're still only saving $5,000 a year. Because of the lifestyle creep, they're getting stuck in this cycle where they can see that their ability to afford a fancy life is getting better, but they're ending up self-sabotaging because they're not taking the advice of Algamish and using that extra money to put into investments, which would ultimately give them the ability to live that lifestyle in a safer way and also allow them to build up more so they could live that lifestyle even better. So lifestyle creep is a very serious threat to a lot of people. I can confidently say that I myself have fallen into it at certain times because it's extremely tempting. It's extremely tempting to take advantage of money that you see sitting in your savings account because it's there. You can literally use it. You know, it's your money. But we have to be extremely cautious and make sure that we're relying on the goals that we set for ourselves and we're not getting distracted by the luxuries that money can provide. And that will end up sabotaging us to where, I mean, people who make even $1 billion, the notorious example is a lot of people that are involved in professional sports that end up going broke because they have an extravagant lifestyle funded by their incomes that are tens of millions of dollars in many cases. They stop playing the sport, their income goes to very, very low, but they have a huge house, they have many, many cars with payments, they have all this stuff that still has to be paid for, and they end up being back in a position of having to live paycheck to paycheck too. Two examples of that. Two huge houses, but Mike Tyson purchased a huge house that was, I believe, 20,000 square feet plus. 50 Cent purchased a house in Connecticut that was absolutely ginormous. Looks like we have a question now. Okay, excellent. Yeah, feel free to send them through, but it looks like it says no callers on my end now. Go to Zach. Okay, let me see here. Yeah, I think it dropped through because I'm on that and it says no callers. I saw Zach just a second. Okay, I see Zach now. Zach, can you hear me? Okay, I think we're having a little bit of technical difficulties with Zach. So, Zach, if you can hear me, please try again. I can see you trying to get through, but it looks like it's dropping. It's dropped twice. But both of those gentlemen, 50 Cent and Mike Tyson, unfortunately had the experience of buying these houses. They had to sell them for a wash because they no longer had the income to pay for it. I know 50 Cent, this was a house right after he became super famous with his very first album, and it was a $20 million mansion. And he ended up having to sell it for right around $3 million years later. So that was not the prettiest picture. But lifestyle creep affects everybody. Nobody is immune to it. You know, we can think that maybe these people learn better whenever they have that much money, but it's not necessarily the case. So be very careful with lifestyle creep. Give us a call, 281-558-5738.
Hi, this is Steve Davis of the Total Wealth Academy radio show. Most people think they need hundreds of thousands of dollars to successfully invest in real estate. That's simply not true. If you have $100,000 or more, you can begin passive investing today. No worrying with contractors or tenants, and you get all the benefits of real estate investing. To find out more, please attend our free sample class live or online. Visit TotalWealthAcademy.com. That's TotalWealthAcademy.com, and click the free sample class button. Thank you.
Okay, everybody, this is Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy radio show. If you have a question, please give us a call, 281-558-5738. We are in the last section of the show, so this is the section I want to be Q&A, and I will also answer questions via email. So we have Zach with a question. Zach, can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, Trevor.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Frequent caller of the show, actually. And if Steve's listening, he's probably gonna be laughing. But I love the topic of lifestyle creep in general.
Yes.
And I felt like calling in because I had called in before and talked to him about this topic. But I think today more than ever, number one, the statistics you showed bared out, you know, what it was. But secondly, in this unique time of, let's call it this commodity super cycle, if you will, where things, everything costs so much money,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, I had been calling in and mentioning to Steve about, like, you know, wanting to do a substantial renovation on a primary residence. So like you mentioned, it's there to serve you and it's not necessarily all about money and investment. However, today, it just seems like you could be accused of lifestyle creep on the cost of a renovation so quickly. I'm seeing things like that used to be, say, $250,000 renovation is now over $400,000.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, I just thought it was interesting in how it could apply to lifestyle creep and general inflation. But the other question I had, just if you had any opinion on another thing Steve talks a lot about, is the mental part of investing and the way the human brain works. And I've always believed and seen that the human brain tends to extrapolate current circumstances into mm-hmm. forever, whether it's mm-hmm. your mental situation or the investment environment, right? When things are good, mm-hmm. everybody thinks it's going to be good forever. When things are bad, they think it's going to be bad forever.
Yep.
And what I hear over and over today is that, well, prices are just going to keep going up. And I just was curious if you had any thought on that, if you've ever had that conversation or seen it in renovations and things that are going on that are affecting the real estate market. You know, are prices really going to stay like this forever?
No, definitely not. And we're literally, and you make that perfect point there, because, you know, our brain is trying to make this something forever, really at all times, because it just has to, it's trying to attach itself to what's familiar and doesn't kill us. And that's just that brutal point, because that's the ultimate survival mode brain. But it's just not what we have seen historically. We have just consistently seen in all economies, up cycles, down cycles, up, down. It's a wave that keeps on going in one direction or another. It tends to go up overall, which is normal. And that's really one of the biggest points of inflation. Not that I'm an economist or anything, but we are sooner or later going to see a down market, and to put it into perspective, we have to be prepared, because if we're seeing how high this market has been, if we're seeing how long this high market has been, then we should really be expecting something just as severe on the other side of in the down market. Not to say that it's strictly going to be like, if it's plus two this in this market, then it's going to be negative two in that. It could be a little more, little less, but it's just a matter of time. Because it's just not something that can keep going like this. The same thing in a down market. If we tried to convince ourselves, let's say we were in a down market right now, and we were having this conversation about the down market instead, and the answer would be the same. It's eventually going to go up. Things are going to change, and it's going to turn around in the different direction. So it's just a matter of time, and I can definitely tell you, I don't know when it's going to happen. I've been doing my best to read about when it's going to happen, and nobody has any solid answer, and that's just the way it is, because we don't know. We're not the economy as individuals. Even some of the most brilliant economic minds and professors and reporters, they can throw it out there, but last year, for example, I was watching stuff at the beginning of the year in 2021 where people are like, okay, we saw what COVID did. It kind of did something that we weren't expecting, but now we should see the down market. Next month, and now it's March 2022. But again, it is a matter of time that we're going to see the down market come. Will it be hard? Maybe. Will it end up being something that goes on for a while? Maybe. We don't know.
I think it's like you said, when the down market comes, the same irrational thoughts will happen where you don't want to take action because you feel like it's going to keep going down further, right? Oh, I'll wait until it goes down a little more, right? And it's just interesting because I feel like I've been challenging myself, like, and mine's like in between. It's real estate, but it's not an investment, right? So an investment property is strictly about numbers, right? So the numbers work, but a primary residence is a little bit more confusing because it's a little more emotional. It's there to serve you, as Steve would say.
Oh, it's pure emotion. Oh, it's pure emotion. I mean, I have so much respect for realtors because seeing them work and hearing what they have to do to get these houses closed, like with the realtors here at Total Wealth, it's drama from beginning to end dealing with these folks. I mean, some are easier than others, but one of my realtors was literally driving a guy to and from the airport just so they could have that time to talk. And it was just like he becomes basically a friend to him just to get this deal done.
And the other, real quick, not to take your whole show, but the other aspect that Steve brought up that he brings up a lot about investing is, then I started asking myself, well, am I using my, I don't know if I'm using this term right, but is my caveman brain coming into me and is fear coming into me and I'm just giving myself excuses to not do my home renovation? Or am I being logical that, well, damn, it costs, you know, twice as much as it did 2 years ago. Maybe I'll wait. And, you know, and you can think around and around for day or years, a long time.
Yep.
And it's just interesting when you get
years
caught up
and decades.
In that.
Yeah. Yeah, so. And I mean, when we talk about whether or not to take action, it's ultimately the numbers. And it is literally like that's what makes real estate boring as heck because it's not my passion. My passion is making beer. Steve's passion is teaching people how to become financially independent. And honestly, that's what I love to do now as well. And that's why I love the opportunity to do this radio show now. This is one of the best things that's happened to me, and I'm so happy to be here with everybody and you to talk about this stuff. But when we get to those numbers, it's like the high market right now, we talk about what challenges will people overemphasize to validate not taking action. It's like I have to hear this almost every day where somebody's like, this is what's going on, I can't do this, I can't do that. But it's like, just try to do this. Just put every single effort you can do into this. And sooner or later, something is going to come through because it happens to every person that genuinely tries in this industry. It's one of my favorite things. When it rains, it pours. With real estate, it's like the same thing. Somebody will be starting out. They feel like they can't find anything. All of a sudden, they've got three opportunities to go into, and they're trying to figure out which one is best for them. So that's always that positive part of that. It's like, yes, it's challenging, but every market has its challenges, up, down, sideways, transitional. You have to be ready. You have to be searching. You have to be willing to get a little frustrated sometimes and not let your instantaneous gratification monkey. I wanted to go over that today, but we'll expand on that next week, but the instantaneous gratification monkey will try to distract you at all times and keep you from doing hard stuff. You got to do the hard stuff sometimes.
Yeah, and in conclusion, real quick, Trevor, that's the point is that I agree. I mean, I can't agree more. If this was an investment, like an apartment or running the single family numbers, right, your 70% minus your cost equals your offer. And if the market's too hot for that and it doesn't work, you move to the next. And that's not really an emotional decision. That's about math. You put it in your spreadsheet and you move on. You keep firing. But when it's your primary residence and you're fighting this battle, that's what I was saying is my situation is so challenging is from the investment side, I can just look at it from numbers. But then I'm like, man, I don't want to be a sucker and pay these ridiculously high prices right now. But in the end, it just forces an action. And anyway, it's just a very interesting time is all I'm trying to say. It's just very interesting how expensive everything is. And like you said, if I'm a betting man, I have no idea when, but it won't last like this forever, even though our minds feel that way. So anyway.
Exactly. Cool. Great point, Zach. So I thank you so much for being my first caller.
All right. Take care.
All right. So to wrap up, we have less than 1 minute, but I want to go back to what I started off with, and that was that quote by Albert Einstein. And his quote, again, is the measure of intelligence is the ability to change. Are you going to be willing to change? You have the ability to do so, I guarantee it, but are you going to be willing to meet that discomfort, get out of your comfort zone, and do that change? Thank you all very much for tuning in. I'm going to get to everybody that emailed for the book, but my email is trevor@totalwealthacademy.com, trevor@totalwealthacademy.com. This has been Trevor Davis with the Total Wealth Academy Radio Show, my very first one, and thank you all so much for tuning in.
Total Wealth Academy Radio Show. Please remember that this show is for entertainment purposes only and should not be construed as legal, tax, or investing advice. Always get a professional opinion before making any investment decisions. To find out more about coaching and consulting at Total Wealth Academy, visit TotalWealthAcademy.com and attend one of our free sample classes on real estate investing. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.